criminal justice reform has been a hot topic in Michigan recently. Prison sentences in this state are among the longest in the country, and the state spends a large amount on its general fund budget, about 20%, on corrections programs. Now, some of these issues are moving in the Michigan legislature. The House recently approved a nearly 20-bill package that addresses juvenile sentencing and medical parole guidelines. A similarly sized package of bills has just been introduced in the Michigan Senate, many of which pertain to parole rules. Joining me now to help us understand these developments is Barbara Levine, Associate Director of Research and Policy for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Barb, nice to have you back on Current State.
Nice to be back. Thank you, Mark.
For starters, do we know how many inmates are in Michigan prisons today?
A little under 43,000. The number has been declining on the men's side. It's going up still a little on the women's side.
Okay. Your organization made a series of recommendations not quite a year ago. You visited this program to discuss them. CAP suggested that Michigan could significantly reduce its prison population by about 10,000 inmates. With those recommendations, you maintain that Michigan routinely keeps inmates in prison past their minimum sentencing. Why are inmates kept incarcerated so long in this state?
Well, there's a variety of reasons why Michigan's length of stay is longer than other states, but one of the issues is how parole guidelines are used. And there's a bill that's passed the House now called presumptive parole or evidence-based parole that would tackle that problem. Michigan has parole guidelines that say when someone is assessed as being at a low risk for reoffending, they're supposed to be paroled when they've served their minimum sentence, unless there are substantial and compelling reasons not to release them. Unfortunately, the statute, which has been on the books since 92, doesn't define substantial and compelling reasons, and that phrase has been interpreted quite differently by various board members. So there's a lack of consistency in whether people who have served their minimum and are low risk actually get released at their first eligibility date. And the presumptive parole bill that has passed the House would contain some definitions, some clear, narrow definitions of what substantial and compelling reasons would be, and the Michigan Department of Corrections anticipates as a result that alone would save about 3,200 beds in 5 years. So consistent application of parole standards would go a long way to helping to reduce our length of stay.
Well, the House passed the presumptive parole measure last October. It's been in the Senate ever since. What is the Senate grappling with in that measure exactly?
Well, there's been some opposition to the bill that, frankly, is based on a lot of misinformation. There have been some, you know, stories circulating about parolees who've committed very serious offenses, but hardly any of them were low risk when they were released, so they're not from the population that would even be affected by presumptive parole. And, of course, they're a very small percentage of all the parolees that are released. There's been concern about what the impact on county costs would be of releasing more parolees, but the fact is we release 10,000 parolees a year. We're talking about releasing, you know, another 1,000 or so a year.
That's all that measure would do? It'd bump it up by 1,000?
Well, in order to get to 3,200 beds saved in 5 years, yeah. It's a small additional percentage, but it has a cumulative effect because those people get denied for a year at a time or 18 months at a time, and so it's cumulative. But, yeah, and again, because these are the lowest risk folks, they're unlikely to reoffend, and they're certainly unlikely to reoffend in very serious ways. And so the impact on, you know, county jails of people committing new offenses would be very small. So there's this sort of rhetoric out there that's concerning legislators, but the fact is it's a lot of misinformation, and the answers to all of it is quite simple. And the bottom line is it is really a way of simply enforcing a statute that's been on the books for years and making the administrative decision-making in parole more consistent.
We're talking about a series of criminal justice reforms that are moving through the Michigan House and Senate. Our guest is Barb Levine, Associate Director for Policy and Research for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Let's talk about the package that just passed out of the Michigan House. There's a number of new reforms that now go to the Senate. One of them takes 17-year-olds who commit crimes out of the hands of adult criminal courts and gives jurisdiction to family courts. Would giving family courts a bigger role be a good thing?
It's certainly something. Raising the age of criminal responsibility from 17 to 18 is certainly something we've advocated. We didn't take the lead on these bills, but it's the whole package is certainly something that we support. Right now, 17-year-olds are considered adults in Michigan, and it's one of only 9 states in the country that does that. The norm nationally is certainly 18. And the more there has been scientific research into brain development, the more raising the age becomes, the importance of that becomes clear. 17-year-olds, as any parent knows, are kids. They're impulsive. They don't think long-term, and they should be treated like kids. That said, this bill would not change the fact that those kids who commit the most serious offenses, whether they're 17 or younger, could still be waived into adult court and treated as adults. So it's not that no kids would end up in prison, but 17-year-olds who are now treated as adults, no matter what the seriousness of their crimes are, and hundreds end up in prison every year for things like B&E or, you know, drugs or things that short of murder and robbery, those kids would be treated in the first instance as juveniles.
The House also passed a medical parole measure. This affects a small number of prisoners, but I imagine this comes out of a substantial cost savings for the state. Can you explain what the medical parole reform would do?
It would allow medically frail prisoners, whether it's a mental illness like dementia, whether it's a serious illness that may not even be age-related like cancer, or whether it's disabilities due to age that make people absolutely very low risk, virtually no risk, it would allow them to go be paroled, even though they would not otherwise be eligible for parole yet, and go to nursing homes on the outside. Yes, the hope in part is that this is in large part it's a cost savings, and that Medicaid would ultimately pick up these costs. That's still in negotiation. There are other states who have similar proposals going, and they're negotiating with the feds about the cost pickup. But it's also a question of humanity and of prison management. I mean, our prisons are not designed to be nursing homes, but we have geriatric units at a couple of prisons now, and you've got people who are housed both at great expense and under difficult conditions, who are very, very frail. Mm. So they simply, they're no risk to the public. There's no logic to having them in prison, and they could get suitable care outside.
Another bill that's still pending in the House, in a House committee, pertains to the concept of judicial veto, and this affects people serving life sentences who are up for parole. What's the issue there?
Actually, that's out of committee. It's pending on the House floor, and we hope that it will get voted out next week.
Okay, noted.
That's people who are sentenced to parolable life who become eligible for release if they were committed their offense before 92, became eligible after serving 10 years. Now parolable lifers have to serve 15 years. But our law allows, and it's quite unique, allows either the sentencing judge who actually imposed the sentence or that judge's successor to file an objection to the release of that prisoner. And even though the board has vetted the person and considered their history thoroughly and determined that they may well be good candidates for release, the process can be stopped cold by the objection of a successor judge who had nothing to do with the original sentence, has no firsthand knowledge of the prisoner or the case, Most judges don't exercise that authority. They'd rather defer to the board because they recognize that they don't have the real information to make a good decision. But there are some judges who choose to exercise this, and about 25% of the parolable lifers on whom the board wants to proceed end up being vetoed. And so they sit there, you know, waiting another 5 years for another review, hoping that a different successor judge somewhere down the road won't object. So what this bill would do is say that successor judges can get notice of the parole board's intentions to proceed and offer comment, but unlike the original sentencing judge, they would not, their objections would not be binding on the board.
Barbara Levine is our guest. Barbara's Associate Director for Policy and Research for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. We're talking about a series of criminal justice reforms that are moving through the Michigan House and Senate. There's always some degree of pushback with legislation that reduces prison terms and eases parole restrictions. We'll hear expressions of caution or outright concern from prosecuting attorneys, county sheriffs, and others in law enforcement that this is leniency that endangers public safety. To what extent are those concerns justified?
All of the bills that we've just discussed, the juvie bills are a different concept, but the presumptive parole, the medical paroles, and the judicial veto all have to do with releasing low-risk offenders. In the case of the medical paroles, you're talking about people who wouldn't even have the capacity to harm anyone if they wanted to. The judicial veto involves people who the parole board who have served, in most cases, 25, 30, 35 years. These are also older prisoners who the board has very carefully vets and doesn't decide on until after a public hearing at which anyone can testify. And, of course, presumptive parole, the single biggest piece of all this, applies only by definition to people who score low risk on the department's risk assessment instrument. So Public safety is at the core of all of these. They all go to the notion that we should not be incarcerating people who aren't a threat to the public longer than necessary, either for their own sake or for the taxpayers' sake.
We spent not as much time on the Michigan Senate bills as I would have liked, but we have to leave it there. We want to thank our guest, Barb Levine, Associate Director for Policy and Research for CAPS, the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. We've been talking about criminal justice reforms moving through the Michigan House and the Michigan Senate. Barbara Levine, thank you.